A Story Publishing presents Leashes of Fate. Prologue. Boston in February behaved like a petty ex, cold, unpredictable, and convinced I deserved it. The wind came off the harbor with a bad attitude, slapped brick with wet mitts, and crawled down collars like gossip. Streetlights glowed the color of old aspirin. Everything smelled faintly of brake dust and chowder, including somehow the sky. It was that special epoch of urban history when an entire city was held together by spreadsheets, duct tape, and hashtags. The MBTA announced delays in a tone that suggested both regret and inevitability. Construction cones formed modern art installations no one approved, but everyone interpreted. If you whispered permit in City Hall, a printer somewhere coughed up a mauve form and judged your shoes. Pedestrians marched by in down coats, so overstuffed they squeaked when they turned. They shouldered bags full of reusable containers and reusable opinions. Phones lit up faces in blue relief. Any misstep, literal or metaphorical, could round the corner, hop the curb, and become a viral video before your coffee cooled. There were wars worth caring about. We, being human, cared loudly about dog content. Because this was also Boston, in the age of fur. Not just pets, but lifestyle accoutrements with Instagram handles. Dogs had wardrobes that required storage discussions. They went to daycares with mission statements, saw behaviorists who quoted science and Taylor Swift, and drank filtered water that tasted like notes of municipal pipe. You could glance at a leash and guess the owner's podcast habits. On the sidewalks, packs paraded behind athleisure-clad shepherds who moved with the efficient bounce of folks monetizing cardio. The true pros wore belts bristling with carabiners and treats, the way Batman wears trauma. They shouted names that read like smoothies. Matcha, Mochi, Moxie, Neil deGrasse Dogson? No one blinked. The only thing weirder than the names was how many humans chose to wear fingerless gloves in a month designed to bite fingers clean off. I watched from my window across a courtyard that collected wind like secrets. Retirement, pea green as the recliner I sank into, had been going very, very cautiously. I had left a career in not enough sleep and just enough satisfaction to justify the ulcer. I had traded meetings for crosswords and adopted a strict policy of horizontal honesty. My proudest daily act was convincing a Dunkin' lid to stay on until my tongue stopped trusting me. Some men bought motorcycles. I bought Dollar Store Coco and dove headfirst into the thrilling world of late-night cable and radiators that hissed like snakes who wanted a union. From my fifth-floor vantage point, I watched Boston spin on without me and felt smug about dodging its meteor showers. My view spanned a slice of sky, a brick flank, and a sliver of the alley where lives got delivered. Somewhere below, sirens practiced scales. Somewhere above, a neighbor smoked out the window and turned the courtyard into a nicotine snow globe. It should have stayed theoretical. But cities like to take theory and drag it down to street level until it scuffs its knees and cries. Mine began with fur. Slide the lens in a notch and you hit the neighborhood. Beacon Hill pretending it hadn't noticed the century turned. Gas lanterns. Black iron fences, brownstones standing shoulder to shoulder the way men do at urinals, uneasy solidarity. The sidewalks were the width of a yoga mat, a spiteful detail when you're both avoiding slush volcanoes and pretending not to hear a poodle wearing boots click at you from behind. On Charles Street, there were stores that sold three things: sweaters that cost more than my first car, pet tartares, and scented candles with names like Snowbound Philosopher. The smell of lavender had declared eminent domain on three blocks. In the window of a shop called Pause and Reflect, you can't accuse my son of missing a pun, smiling dogs flashed teeth like used car salesmen while a chalkboard announced mindful pack walks in a font that always charges extra. The cultural math worked out like this. People here treated their dogs like fragile heirlooms and viewed the MBTA like an exiled uncle we all still invite to holidays. Boston believed in two core truths: everything required a permit, and bent rules were just rules in yoga pants. The T said no animals unless they were in carriers. Commuters said, look at this chihuahua in a bomber jacket. He counts as emotional support and also cousin. Transit cops enforced policy the way bouncers enforce dress codes, with eyebrow calculus and the occasional benevolent shrug. Which is how you saw a rainbow of leashes wrapped around a center pole at rush hour and decided to film instead of intervene. We live in times that convert chaos to content faster than I can convert medium hot to third-degree lip injury. Focus in again, and you'll see the pressure building behind one unassuming storefront. My son Alex had inherited my face, my mother's ability to weaponize optimism, and precisely none of my retirement goals. He ran pause and reflect with the kind of enthusiasm that makes other people tired. He jogged before sunrise because endorphins or a demon pact, and he'd somehow convinced a chunk of the neighborhood that his particular blend of kindness and cardio could convert their canine tornadoes into sentient throw pillows. Alex was good at it. Better than good. He had a spreadsheet for everything, including an inventory of which hydrants elicited existential crises in which clients. He'd built the business the way you build a snowman after three legitimate storms, layer by layer, until it looked like something people photographed their kids with. He had part-timers who deferred to him like he'd invented leashes. He trended politely on local hashtags. He was, and this is difficult for a father to admit without stretching a hamstring, correct about a lot. He also believed I was one favor away from participating in life, which is adorable. He'd swing by on Sundays with bagels and schemes, eyes bright, beard dusted with sesame seeds, pitching me on light engagement. Light engagement, in his lexicon, meant, please herd wolves through sleet while I teach a puppy to stop eating doorstops. I declined with the grace of a man who has learned that agreeing leads to laundry. Saying no was a muscle I had finally toned. He left a rainbow tangle of leashes on my kitchen floor after one such brunch with a casual, just in case you get bored. I laughed out loud in a way that made my radiator reconsider its self-worth. Boredom had been my most loyal companion for months. We did everything together, especially nothing. On the edges of Alex's orbit circled Tony, a caffeinated comet who introduced himself the way double shots introduce themselves. Suddenly, and with big ideas. Tony had a provisional certification in letters that sounded like a password and used words like limbic to talk about creatures who ate the same sock daily. He carried a pocket full of gadgets that did tiny miracles and said jack attack, like I was both a person and a marketing plan. He believed in playlists, pep, and calling any plan a protocol. He walked like he was leading a parade no one had yet hired, but should. Every business needs a client to haunt it. Ours was Karen, a woman who could turn a compliment into a performance review. She dressed like Nantucket had a feeling summit and named her poodle mix Princess with zero irony but 100% commitment. Karen spoke the dialect of laminated charts. She had a feelings wheel for the dog, a self-care forecast for Tuesdays, and the terrifying ability to email while voicing a complaint and never looking down. She loved us the way a hall monitor loves order, conditionally and out loud. Four people. That's the circle around the storm's eye. Add Boston itself as the fifth character, because any minute it will cough something up. Add the internet as a sixth, a Greek chorus of comments with snacks. And you've got a story that smelled like lavender, diesel, and whatever the dogs rolled in last. The clock that mattered was hidden. It ticked behind weather reports and appointment reminders, behind the daily commute that made the city steam like a dumpling cart. There were dates on the calendar with innocuous names, charity run, permit review, pause in the park, that would later reveal themselves as funhouse doors. We stepped through thinking we were buying kettle corn and discovered instead a structurally unsound roller coaster. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Prologues are where I'm supposed to describe a setup without tripping over the punchline. Fine. Here are the rules of the world as I discovered them, one slapstick at a time. Rule 1. Gravity hates bravado. The minute you say I've got this, you will be converted into a cautionary tale and possibly a gif. The sidewalk will ice, your coffee will choose projectile over partner. You will ride a wet floor sign like a luge while a teenage stranger narrates your ruin. Rule 2. In Boston, bureaucracy isn't an obstacle, it's a sport. Forms come in colors that mean feelings. Stamps stamp your soul. If you arrive at a window 3 minutes before closing, time becomes a theory and your wallet becomes performance art. Rule 3. Dogs follow physics only if physics pays snacks. Otherwise, they follow goose. Goose follows vengeance. That one's in the city charter. Rule 4. If you try to hide from attention, attention will buy your address from a list and show up with balloons. People will film. People always film. The nice ones send you the link. Rule 5. A couch can die twice. Once by claw, once by lavender oil. I learned those rules against my will. The catalyst was small and obvious. It was a phone call I should have ignored, but didn't. Before that, there was a quiet night that tried very hard to be the last of its kind. I sat in my living room with the recliner angled for maximum heat absorption from the radiator. The television murmured weather in a voice so cheerful it felt like a dare. A pot of cocoa did its best imitation of chocolate and failed. My crossword asked me to admit to something 5 letters long, onus, as it turned out. The city outside breathed white and slow, like a sleeping dragon. Across the courtyard, someone's dog auditioned for a siren. I answered with the kind of silence you can only execute after your children move out and your plants have died in protest. Alex's text tone chirped every few minutes, breadcrumbing me through his plan for the morning. A charity run at sunrise, because of course, and then a stack of walks that had to thread a needle the size of Boston traffic. He sent me a photo of the spreadsheet like a proud new parent. I sent him a photo of my mug of cocoa like a proud retiree, captioned, Scald Risk Level, Expert. He signed off with an emoji that looked like a tiny runner being judged by clouds. I put the phone face down and congratulated myself on resisting his not even subtle attempt to conscript me. I had learned to treat requests like the MBTA treats snow forecasts. Say you're ready, then do nothing about it and hope for a miracle. On the table sat those leashes he'd abandoned 3 days earlier. Neon ropes coiled with the promise of chafing. They had gravitated, as all clutter does, into the exact path where my foot would land. Corners accumulate destiny. I told myself I'd move them. I practiced picturing a future where my hand wrapped around all that nylon and didn't turn into a cautionary tale. I imagined the pack, a bulldog who snored like a clogged saxophone, a poodle mix with anxiety and an influencer's haircut, a chihuahua named after a war god because irony is an essential nutrient, a border collie puppy whose eyes said, I love you, and whose legs said, crime. In my fantasy, they walked in straight lines and pooped discreetly and tipped well. In my fantasy, I wasn't the guy muttering apologies to municipal landscaping. I put my fantasy back in the drawer and went to rinse my mug. Through the window, the city blew a curtain of flakes across the orange mouth of a streetlight. Snow changed the soundtrack. It made tire noise become whisper and footfalls become small confessions. I stood there and let my kitchen be a planet where the only weather that mattered was on the stove. I slept like a man who wasn't due in any scene. I slept like gravity owed me a favor. I woke at 2 to pee and at 3 to curse a dream in which I attended a seminar that was just a slideshow about leash knots. I woke at 4 when the radiator thumped a warning about future plumbing bills. I dozed at 5. At 5:59, I made the mistake of trusting 6 a.m. Here's the thing about 6 a.m. It is plot o'clock. It has never delivered good news in my life. If 6 a.m. calls, it means hospital, airport, or someone wants to sell you essential oils. My phone chose to vibrate itself off the coffee table like a trapped bee. Unknown number. The screen buzzed like a conscience. I stared at it, which is to say, I stared at my choice. If I ignored it, I kept my day, my recliner, my reputation for indifference. If I answered, I invited the entire city to introduce itself to me personally, one insultingly cute leash at a time. Outside, snow decided to get serious. Somewhere, a train braked and sang about pain. In the courtyard, a dog told me my old quiet life was over, and I pretended not to speak bark. I picked up anyway, because apparently my spine commits kindness without asking my mouth first. I said hello like a man negotiating a plea deal with fate, and fate, clocked in, caffeinated, wearing a lanyard, said, "Dad, don't hang up." All of Boston exhaled like a laugh track cued 3 beats too early. Coffee seemed like an unwise liquid. The radiator, now a Greek chorus of steam, hissed, "Told you." The leashes on the kitchen linoleum sharpened their colors, bright as sirens. And the universe, which enjoys slapstick as much as anybody, pulled me up by the back of my coat and shoved me toward the kind of week that ends with you dabbing on live TV while a poodle journals about gratitude. But first, I had to find the fake rock. End of prologue. The night before everything went sideways, Boston felt almost polite. I'd pulled the recliner into sniper range of the radiator, nursed a mug of dollar store cocoa, and congratulated myself on a full 24 hours without answering to anyone's calendar. Retirement, my version anyway, was a vow of horizontal living fortified by crossword puzzles and scalding Duncan. Across the courtyard, Mrs. Konopka's yappy schnauzer auditioned for a horror movie, but I tuned him out the way you learn to ignore elevator music, by assuming it's for someone else. The only real interruption came from my son's text thread pinging like a slot machine. "Training run tomorrow, 6 a.m. charity race. You coming to cheer?" I clap internally. "Fine, just don't die before I call in that retirement favor. I've hidden the spare key. Good luck finding which fake rock." Typical banter. He promised exercise. I promised inertia. Balance restored. I shuffled to the kitchen for a refill, and nearly face-planted on a rainbow tangle of leashes sprawled across the linoleum. Parting gift from Alex after last Sunday's brunch drop-by. "In case you ever want cardiovascular joy," he'd said, eyes sparkling with cult leader optimism. I'd laughed, shoved them under a chair, and triple-checked that my building had a strict no-pets-over-a-succulent policy. Still, those leashes lay there like Chekhov's neon ropes, daring me to imagine a reality where I held more than a coffee cup. I pictured myself wrangling a pack through snow-slick streets, coffee lids erupting, geese heckling from the public garden, Boston's transit cops sharpening citations. The mental clip already had a laugh track. I shook it off, grabbed the crossword, and circled back to 12 down. Burden accepted reluctantly. 5 letters. Took me 3 tries before the word clicked. Onus. I wrote it in, smug, and missed the universe winking. Midnight slid into 2 a.m. The city hushed, radiator hissed lullabies, and I finally dozed off, convinced tomorrow would be as gloriously uneventful as the cocoa was thin. Turns out, the future had my number, and it preferred to dial before dawn. Morning barged in without knocking. I was halfway through a crossword and my first sip of scald-your-tongue Duncan, the bitter flavor clinging to my tongue like a bad habit, when my phone vibrated like it wanted a restraining order. Unknown number, but it was 6 a.m. and nobody kind calls at 6. The darkness outside pressed its nose to the glass like a creep, all damp and clingy, the city lights reflecting off the wet pavement like a funhouse mirror. "Dad, don't hang up." Alex's voice came through a gale of sirens and what sounded like someone gargling gravel, queuing up the greatest hits of parenthood in my head. ER vending machines, copays, and me pretending I understood medical charts. He sounded strained, his usual bravado tempered by the pain and worry. My brain helpfully flashed a montage of Alex breaking things on and off his body, skateboard, wrist, my sanity, like a trailer I had not asked to see. My heart didn't sink so much as step out for a smoke, a bad habit I'd kicked in 07. Ambulance? You promised me you'd given up experimental parkour. I rubbed the grit from my eyes, the crossword puzzle blurring on the coffee table as I sat up, my feet tangling in the blanket. It's the charity 10K. Black ice, mile 3. Ankle's a Picasso now. I need you to cover walks today. Actually, the week. The nurse's voice in the background, foot still attached, lucky duck, was a jarring counterpoint to Alex's strained tone, and I could almost see the wry smile on his face. I pinched the bridge of my nose, smearing coffee on myself, the warmth a fleeting comfort. Alex, you're aware my retirement plan involves zero mammals with more legs than me. I said it like a man bargaining with the universe for store credit, trying to keep my tone light. Text me the schedule, I said, because apparently I was a soft touch for blood relatives and guilt ferrets. The phone beeped as Alex sent over the details, a digital lifeline to a world I wasn't ready to enter. Outside, Boston looked like a snow globe someone had shaken, sneezed into, and forgotten to clean. Wind slapped my face with the enthusiasm of an unpaid intern, the chill seeping into my bones as I trudged 3 blocks to Alex's daycare storefront. Pause and reflect, the only place in town where enlightenment came with complimentary liver treats. The sign creaked in the wind, a jaunty rhythm that belied the chaos within. The snow crunched underfoot, the sound muffled by the thick flakes that continued to fall. The fake rock was buried under a drift as convincing as a toddler's lie. I dug it out, key between numb fingers, and popped the lock. Inside, the air was thick with the scent of cedar chips, optimism, and something the health inspector would nickname, yikes. I stomped snow onto a salt-crusted mat and swung the deadbolt behind me, the sound echoing through the empty space like a challenge. The gear wall mocked me. Rainbow leashes, harnesses the size of sports bras, poop bag rolls, in millennial birthday party pastels. I grabbed armfuls like a contestant in a depressing game show, the leashes tangling around me like a bad joke. The fluorescent lights overhead cast an unforgiving glare, highlighting the chaos that lay before me. First snag, no coat hooks on my body. Leashes slid, tangled, and whipped around my neck. I looked like a hostage of a festive boa constrictor, the colorful mess a stark contrast to the drab Boston morning. I muttered a few choice words under my breath as I tried to untangle myself. Second snag, my phone ringing again. Caller ID, Karen Stevenson. Client, likes to pre-schedule anxiety attacks. I thumbed speaker, trying to sound more awake than I felt. Morning, Karen. Earth still spinning. What's up? The sound of Karen's voice, a high-pitched stream of consciousness, was a jarring reminder that the day was already spiraling out of control. Princess had a nightmare. She hasn't blinked since 4. Can you do a calming walk at 9? It's her self-care day. I glanced at the spreadsheet Alex had texted. Princess already on it. 9 sharp. I'll chant positive affirmations into her ear. The lie felt like a reflex, a desperate attempt to placate the Karen-shaped storm brewing on the other end of the line. Voicemail alert. Tony. I played it while stuffing pockets with poop bags, the sound of Tony's voice, a caffeinated puppy on steroids, a brief respite from the chaos. Yo, Mr. K. Heard about Alex. I can cover afternoon shifts tomorrow. Gotta finish my certification exam today. It's on YouTube, but, you know, rigorous. Peace. The message ended, and I was left staring at the phone, wondering what other surprises the day had in store. First pickup was Thor the Chihuahua, whose owner lived 2 floors up with a taste for velvet throw pillows and unsolved murder podcasts. Thor weighed 4 pounds and strode out wearing a spiked harness sized for a grapefruit, his beady eyes glinting with mischief. He yapped once, heard the echo, decided that was enough cardio. The sound sent a pang of nostalgia through me. Alex's own high-energy antics when he was younger, only with less drool and more broken IKEA. Thor's owner, a petite woman with a fond smile, handed him over to me with a whispered warning about Thor's tendency to nip at ankles. Next, Meatball the Bulldog from the laundromat beside the daycare. He waddled toward me like a bowling ball with self-esteem issues, snorting steam that fogged up my glasses. I clipped his leash to my belt for ballast, the weight of him a comforting presence. The sound of the laundromat's spinning machines and the smell of detergent filled the air as I waited for the rest of the pack. Princess the Poodle Mix awaited in Karen's foyer, wrapped in a microfleece blanket like a twitchy burrito, her eyes fixed on me with an unnerving intensity. Karen handed me the pink quartz leash with the gravitas of a knight bequeathing Excalibur, her expression a perfect blend of concern and expectation. Remember, positive vibrations. I nodded, the lie feeling like a bad habit. Karen's foyer was warm and cozy, the scent of fresh-baked cookies wafting through the air, a stark contrast to the cold chaos outside. Banjo the Border Collie pup met us outside his building by attempting a triple axel in slush, his paws waving wildly as he struggled to right himself. Two additional walk-ins, a beagle with cataract goggles and a mutt shaped like a question mark, rounded out the sextet. 10 minutes in, my right arm was 1 inch longer, the leashes tangling into a maddening knot. The sound of barking and the feel of wet fur against my legs added to the sensory overload. Sidewalks resembled buttered marble, the snow-covered streets a treacherous obstacle course. Every step threatened a slapstick death, the dogs weaving around me like a furry, slobbering conga line. Princess pranced daintily, Meatball treated gravity as optional. Thor attempted to bite snowflakes because a fence is everywhere if you look hard enough. I kept count, 4 near falls, 3 apologies to fire hydrants I'd mistaken for sleeping dogs, 1 lost glove. The cold air stung my face, and the snowflakes danced around us, caught in the whirlwind of our passage. Halfway to the common, my phone buzzed again. An appointment reminder Alex had set, vet pickup at 11 across the river. No chance on foot. I eyed the Park Street T station, the entrance a yawning mouth that seemed to beckon me toward chaos. All right, delinquents, I announced, channeling the substitute teacher I once was fired for being field trip underground. The dogs yapped in response, a chorus of excitement that sent a spark of trepidation through me. Down the stairs we shuffled, past clouds of damp humanity clutching their commutes like grudges. A transit cop raised an eyebrow the height of the Prudential Center, but waved us through when Thor sneezed adorably. Weaponized cuteness won again. The sound of the city, car horns, chatter, and the wail of sirens in the distance, created a cacophony that was both overwhelming and exhilarating. The Red Line platform smelled of brake dust, the ozone tang of hot metal, and existential dread. An incoming train screeched, the sound like a rusty gate scraping against concrete. Doors slid open, rush hour passengers packed tighter than freezer burritos. I inhaled bravery, tasted like burnt coffee, and boarded, the dogs surging forward like a furry, slobbering tide. Instant mistake. The 7 of us occupied the aisle like a furry centipede, leashes zigzagging across knees and backpacks. Banjo tried to herd a teenager's AirPods, the sound of the boys' angry protests lost in the cacophony. Meatball drooled rhythmically on a patent leather briefcase, the owner shooting me a withering glance. I planted my boots, sipped my coffee, and rehearsed calming mantras, "It's temporary. Jail time is temporary, too." The words felt like a lie, a desperate attempt to stave off the impending chaos. Thor discovered the floor vent and decided it was a portal to hell. He shrieked, the sound piercing the air like a siren. Princess caught the vibe and twirled, leash winding around my calf like a snake. The beagle attempted diplomacy with a seated grandma's pashmina, ingesting tassels as he went, the sound of his choking gasp sending a jolt of panic through me. The train lurched. Physics, that spiteful gremlin, yanked me sideways. My coffee pirouetted up and away, a caramel comet, before baptizing a commuter's khaki trench in brackish warmth. The man leaped up with a howl, the sound echoing through the car like a battle cry. In the same heartbeat, Banjo darted between his legs, leash snaring both the man and the center pole. Meatball's tether crossed over, forming a cat's cradle of doom. Passengers shrieked variations of, "Seriously?" The air was thick with the smell of wet dog, sweat, and fear. I fumbled for buttons, knots, divine intervention. More lunges, more lurches. Somewhere a conductor's voice crackled. Who's got the zoo? Handle it, or get off at downtown crossing. The words were a challenge, a gauntlet thrown down in the midst of the chaos. The trench coat victim tried to step free, yanking Princess's quartz leash, which in turn cinched around my wrist like a blood pressure cuff. Thor sought asylum under a seat, which tightened the knot around the pole further, binding us into a macrame sculpture labeled Poor Life Choices. The sound of barking, swearing, and squeaking brakes created a symphony of regret, the cacophony threatening to consume me whole. An overhead panel banged open. Emergency lights flickered, turning the car into a haunted disco. The conductor's silhouette approached, hat brim low, fury radiating like a space heater. He stopped 3 feet away, arms crossed, the universal stance for prepare your wallet. The air was thick with tension, the outcome hanging precariously in the balance. Some men faced midlife crises. I faced 50 paws and a furious T conductor. He loomed, brim and badge eclipsing the flicker of the emergency lights. The conductor's mustache twitched, a nervous tick that mirrored my own pre-divorce habits. Leashes off the floor, sir. The words hung in the air, a challenge to my sanity. Working on it, I lied, as the knot now included a stranger's shoelace, the center pole, and possibly maritime law. Banjo yipped, Princess trembled, Thor growled at an invisible foe, Meatball drooled on my other boot, a gesture of solidarity. I shifted my weight, trying to untangle the mess without losing a limb or my grip on the situation. The doors chimed for Park Street, a salvation just 20 feet away, separated from me by a sea of commuters who decided group glaring was a spectator sport. I inhaled, tasting panic and cumin, the lingering scent of someone's lunch, and made a choice that history would later label ill-advised but bold. I unclipped every carabiner at once, releasing a furry tsunami into the platform. The human latticework toppled like disgruntled dominoes as I let momentum carry me through the gap just as the doors slid open. Someone behind shouted, "World Star!" A warning or a blessing, depending on their perspective. We shot onto the platform, a chaotic ensemble of barking dogs and flailing leashes. I skated on melted slush, lost traction, and pinwheeled, my coffee-slick soles meeting polished tile in a spectacular display of bad timing. I rode my dignity straight into a wet floor sign, which, in fairness, had been honest about the impending doom. Thor cleared the obstacle with ease. I was less aerodynamic. I thudded against a vending machine, sending Funyuns pinging across the tile like poker chips. One landed on Princess's nose. She ate it with an offended sniff. Behind us, the conductor bellowed, "Never come back!" A pronouncement I added to the mental list of places I was banned from, sandwiched between the Natick Applebee's and my ex-brother-in-law's timeshare. I rubbed my sore head, wondering how I'd explain this debacle to Alex. A teenage girl across the track finished filming, smiled, and mouthed, "That was awesome." My future unemployment check waved back in a mocking gesture. I forced a smile, hoping it'd translate to, "I meant to do that." We conga-lined up the exit escalator, the escalator's moving teeth chomping at our heels like a hungry predator. The cold air hit us like a slap in the face as we burst into the February sunlight, our collective breath smoking like cheap pyrotechnics. The handrail left a stripe of road salt gray across my palm, a souvenir from our wild ride. "Jack attack!" a voice squeaked from the top of the stairs, followed by Tony, who barreled toward us with lidded lattes in each hand and a messenger bag flapping against his knees. He wore neon sneakers and the grin of a caffeine evangelist, his eyes shining with an unnerving level of enthusiasm. Without slowing, he ducked under Meatball's leash, over Banjo's, and executed a pirouette, emerging beside me untouched. "Show off. Bad morning?" he asked, thrusting a cup at my face. "Also, I'm between exam modules, had to stretch my legs." "Define bad," I replied, raising my free hand, which was currently attached to three leashes and one Funyun. Also, define mourning. Tony produced a gizmo that looked like a cross between a climbing carabiner and a fidget spinner. Quick release swivel clip, patent pending. Watch. In two quick, practiced flicks, he untied the knot I'd spent an eternity nurturing. Dogs floated free, orbiting him like hairy moons around a benevolent dictator. Wizardry, I muttered, impressed despite myself. Biomechanical leash management, he corrected, winking. Side hustle once I passed the CCPDT. He said it like most people say Nobel Prize, with a confidence that bordered on delusional. I sipped the latte, oat milk, of course, and felt my soul return to its body, warmed by the comforting familiarity of caffeine. The warmth spread through my chilled bones, and I almost forgave Tony for being a morning person. Right, Tony chirped, clapping his hands together. Agenda. Pack needs decompression. I recommend exposure therapy to diffuse accumulated cortisol. I recommend whiskey, I countered, a reflex born of long experience. Dog park's cheaper, he said with a grin. Plus, you promised Karen Princess would socialize. Pretty sure I only promised not to lose her, I muttered, already regretting the decision. As if summoned, Karen materialized on the sidewalk, manicured and mink-lined, holding a miniature yoga mat and a laminated feelings wheel. Oh, fabulous, I caught you, she said, scanning Princess with the intensity of an airport security scanner. Is she vibrating at a 5? I texted you the chart. She's humming along, I offered, trying not to laugh at the absurdity of it all. Tony stepped in, smooth as silk. Hi, Tony Hernandez, provisional canine behaviorist. Princess displays excellent limbic resilience. Karen's eyes flashed approval. She loved jargon the way geese love vengeance. Splendid. Remember, no negative stimuli. She journaled last night about boundary violations. Karen handed me a packet labeled Emotional Weather Report and vanished into a rideshare, leaving behind a cloud of lavender-scented judgment. Tony waggled his brows. Dog park time? I sighed, checked my phone, 16 missed calls, 1 million notifications, and surrender, trudging toward the public garden, Boston's postcard that forgot it's February. Snowbanks slumped like hangovers. Muddy patches glistened with whatever the city uses instead of shame. The swan boats, their bright colors a jarring contrast to the drab winter landscape, caught my eye. Tony unhooked the pack just inside the gates, and chaos erupted. Banjo began immediate wind sprints, Thor and Princess hot on his heels. Meatball lumbered after, a wrecking ball with asthma. The geese, territorial and ornery, launched from the water in a panic of wings. Tony whooped, "Flight drive! Unexpected variable!" as we gave chase. The beagle and question mark mutt still clipped to my belt, yanking me forward. I stumbled after the pack, my boots pounding the icy path. We barreled onto the footbridge just as Banjo leapt the railing after a goose. He met air, then gravity, then the lagoon's thin ice. Crack. Cold water geysered, and the chase was on. Princess shrieked, ditched aerial pursuit, and dashed toward the swan boat dock instead, barking at plywood birds in hibernation. Thor veered into a stroller convoy. Toddlers screamed like backup sirens. Geese retaliated, a squadron dive-bombing the bridge. I dodged one, slipped on a fresh splotch of poop, and sledded belly down the icy plank. The beagle howled, the mutt screamed, and momentum pitched all three of us off the far end into a snowbank beside a bridal photo shoot. The bride spun, tulle billowing, clouded in hairspray and cold champagne. Flashbulbs popped, and I emerged covered in snow, two dogs dangling, looking like an ad for divorces that haven't happened yet. "Sir, you're in my light," the photographer snapped. "Tell the geese," I gargled, shaking snow from my hair. Across the lagoon, Tony performed a hero dive, yanking Banjo from the slush. Water erupted, soaking a groomsman. Princess zoomed through the scene, trailing a lace veil she'd liberated. Meatball belly flopped into a puddle and snorted triumph. The geese regrouped, charged. Photographers, newlyweds, swan boat caretakers, everyone scattered. I ran, missing traction with my left boot, the sock-only foot meeting mud with a squelch. The boot stayed, my dignity didn't. Somewhere, a violinist for the ceremony hit a minor chord that matched my scream. We collided in a whirl of feathers and formal wear at the foot of George Washington's statue. I caught Princess mid-leap as she brandished the veil like a victory banner. Tony skidded in, dripping, holding banjo upside down to drain water. Meatball shook, redecorating us with pond cologne. A whistle blew. Park ranger? Nope, mayoral aide in a tailored parka, unfazed by the mayhem. She extended a laminated flyer while a goose gnawed her sleeve. City would love positive coverage after this. She gestured at the apocalypse. Pause in the park festival. 2 weeks. PR tent needs a local darling. Interested? I blinked water from my eyes. Do I look darling? She looked me up and down. Mud-striped coat, sock-only foot, bridal veil tangled in my scarf. You look available. She tucked the flyer into my pocket and strode off. Snow melt dripped from my ear. Banjo sneezed lagoon water onto my face. Tony cackled, shaking like a wet noodle on espresso. The bride reclaimed her veil with a glare that promised voodoo. We limped toward Beacon Street, gravity finally reasserting itself. I'd lost the left boot somewhere near George Washington, and my phone buzzed incessantly despite the moisture poisoning. Tony peeked at his screen. Yo, dog rodeo on the red line is trending. I opened my notifications. There I was. Thumbnail freeze-framed mid-tangle, coffee flying like confetti. View count rising faster than my blood pressure. Congratulations, Tony said, patting my shoulder. You're famous. I stared at the dogs, soaked, filthy, jubilant. Then at the sky, which chose that exact moment to drop a wad of slush down my collar. Perfect, I muttered. Exactly how every hero's journey ends Act One, without a boot, and with a million strangers laughing. The dogs pulled me forward, their leashes tangling around me like a bad habit. We trudged on, festival flyer crinkling in my pocket, phone buzzing like a trapped hornet, and Boston, eternal straight man to our farce, kept right on snowing. By the time street level hit our lungs again, the weather had found fresh pettiness. Boston kept flicking slush at us all the way back to pause and reflect, the flakes fat and wet enough to qualify as misdemeanor assault. By the time Tony unlocked the mangled gate, one hinge now protesting in falsetto, the storefront smelled like wet wool and denial. We herded the pack inside, shook off what snow we could, and discovered the sofa had sprouted a fist-sized hole. Probably goose-related PTSD. I jammed a towel into the wound, emptied my soaked pockets, festival flyer keys and a clump of public garden onto the armrest and told the universe we were taking a mulligan tomorrow. As I turned to go crash in the break room, I caught Tony's gaze. He raised an eyebrow, a silent, "You okay?" I nodded, a lie. The adrenaline had worn off, leaving me with a dull ache in my head and a lingering sense of dread. The dim lighting in the daycare highlighted the chaos around us, and the smell of wet fur clung to my clothes. We decided to sleep on site. Tony tossed me a blanket. My spine shook hands with the break room cot. The next morning arrived in full surround sound, the local Channel 9 morning show blaring from the wall-mounted TV. Someone, Tony, had cranked the volume to carnival level. I groggily opened my eyes to find Tony slurping cereal behind me, spoon clanging against the bowl like a metronome of shame. Up next, the anchor chirped, the dog dad disaster. Commuters captured a subway stampede that'll make you clutch your venti. B-roll rolled, my coffee arc, dogs tangled like phone cords from the 90s, me surfing a wet floor sign. A ticker underneath read, who let the dogs commute? Tony chuckled, a snort of milk escaping his nose. You look taller on TV, he offered, patting my shoulder. My phone vibrated itself across the folding table. Caller ID Karen. I accepted because I'm a masochist. Explain why Princess is on the news wearing a stranger's trench coat, she opened. No greeting, just daggers. Yelp trusts me, Jack. Yelp whispers in my ear at night. I pictured Yelp as a winged demon perched on her headboard and shivered. Princess enjoyed a culturally enriching outing, I said. Exposure therapy, like you wanted. I wanted mindfulness, not a hostage video. She inhaled so sharply, I heard her essential oils diffusing across the line. Clean up your act, or I nuke my stars. 1-0. I can petition for 0. She hung up, leaving a citrus-scented doom cloud. Tony finished the milk and slapped the empty carton on the counter. Damage control, boss. Today we go proactive. I prepped a curriculum. He pointed to 3 items laid out like contraband. A lavender essential oil diffuser shaped like a screaming whale, a Bluetooth speaker stenciled with paw prints, and a laminated poster that read, "Bark it till you park it." Motivational playlist, he said. All positive frequencies, and the diffuser calms cortisol spikes. The sofa has cortisol spikes, I muttered, rubbing my temples. As owners arrived in waves, handing off dogs like ticking parcels, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were playing a game of Jenga with the daycare's reputation. By 9, we'd accumulated 15, the usual suspects, plus 2 doodles named Matcha and Mistake, and an elderly pug called Neil deGrasse Dogson, who whistled on the exhale. Tony dimmed the lights, cued his playlist. Synth beats burst forth, punctuated by voiceover affirmations. Who's a confident canine? You are. The diffuser exhaled lavender fog. Within minutes, the daycare smelled like a beached spa. For 5 glorious minutes, nothing exploded. I dared to imagine coffee, hot, no lid, living dangerously, then remembered we'd run out of filters. Corner Cafe sat half a block away, taunting. I'll fetch caffeine, I told Tony. Hold the fort. He saluted. Bring back a chai for the whale diffuser. I stepped into the alley, door snicking shut behind me. The sound was just final. I twisted the knob. Nothing. Deadbolt engaged itself like a self-righteous Roomba. Inside, 15 dogs noticed the sudden drop in the adult-to-dog ratio. Bark levels spiked from coffeehouse chatter to DEFCON 2. I peered through the frosted window. Banjo vaulted the baby gate, hackles pogoing. Thor located a box of rawhides and declared eminent domain. Princess climbed onto the sofa, proudly wearing my spare flannel as a cape, and struck a heroic pose. I pounded the door. Tony! Tony's face appeared at the glass, backlit by purple mist. He fiddled with the latch, wiggled, shrugged, mouthed, "It's stuck." I mouthed back what the FCC would fine. He vanished, presumably hunting tools. A moment later, I heard the back stairwell bang open. He'd found the rear exit, and his sneakers hit the alley. Neil deGrasse Dogson waddled to the diffuser, snuffled, and sneezed lavender droplets onto the speaker. The playlist glitched from affirmations to speed metal Christmas carols. Dogs lost theological certainty and erupted. Matcha body-checked Mistake into the treat shelf. Biscotti-shaped biscuits rained like hail. Meatball head-butted the couch, dislodging stuffing that snowed over the melee. Tony reappeared wielding a flathead screwdriver and a Nerf bat. He jabbed the latch, nothing. Behind him, Princess discovered the wall-mounted phone cord. She yanked it down like a curtain at a magician's reveal. Dial tone died. Goodbye, landline. I scanned the facade. Brick, 2 stories, street parking empty, except for a Subaru with a Bernie sticker. Second floor windows belonged to Mrs. Konopka, who treated me like a noise violation in human form. Only option, back entrance up the fire escape. Boots skidded on icy slats as I clambered the metal skeleton. Halfway up, sleet joined the show, the sky's petty encore. I reached Konopka's window, tapped politely. She parted the curtain 2 inches, spotted me, and shook her head with theological disappointment. Curtain closed. Fine. Plan C, break in through our own skylight, except we don't have a skylight. From the alley came a rhythmic thunk. Tony, outside now, swung the Nerf bat at the door like a disgraced T-ball coach. Foam bounced, door laughed. Over the din, speed metal carols climaxed in a double kick drum solo. A crowd gathered because Boston loves Schadenfreude on lunch break. Somebody filmed. Somebody else bet $10 on whether the poodle would find the biscotti-shaped biscuits. I tried a neighbor's basement hatch. Padlocked. Tried the Subaru. Unlocked but useless. Then inspiration shrugged. Ladder. Salem Hardware sat two storefronts down. I sprinted, threw open the door, and begged. The clerk pointed at a rental aluminum extension ladder. $20. I slammed my debit card, declined. Karen had already begun the Armageddon. The clerk took pity, traded for my Red Sox beanie. I lugged the ladder through slush, applause trailing. Propped it against the daycare's facade, climbed toward the transom window above the sign. The glass looked original to the Eisenhower administration, thin, opinionated. I pulled my elbow inside my coat sleeve, prayed to whichever saint covers property damage, and punched. Glass spiderwebbed, surrendered. I cleared shards, swung a leg over, and discovered an architectural flourish, a drop of 8 feet to the reception desk. Inside, dogs froze, heads tipping in canine synchrony. For one breath, we regarded each other like rival gangs in a musical, then Banjo barked the overture. I jumped, landed on the desk, cursed gravity, hot-footed to the door, and yanked the deadbolt. Tony fell in with the gust of alley air, cheeks purple. They good? We turned. Wrong question. The diffuser lay gutted, whale face down in oils. Stuffing coated the floor like fresh snowfall. Thor perched on the reception computer, paws skittering across the keyboard. On screen, multiple Amazon carts blinked, $600 of bully sticks en route. Princess, atop the couch skeleton, discovered squeakers within the cushions and performed surgery. And the smell, lavender mixed with wet dog and something primordial. I gagged, tasted adolescence. Sirens wailed. Not playlist ones. Real Boston Fire Department sirens. Someone had called them. Probably Konopka, queen of passive-aggressive civic duty. Engine 26 screeched curbside. A firefighter in turnout gear strode in through the door Tony had thoughtfully propped open. He stopped, looked at the carnage, and adjusted his helmet like he wanted hazard pay. "Report of animals in distress," he said. "Just me," I answered. "Emotionally." Two more firefighters hauled in a halogen bar and a length of hose. Banjo greeted them by hurdling the nozzle. Meatball wedged under a folding chair and refused extraction. Thor attempted to assert dominance on a boot. "Containment protocol," the lead announced. "We need the dogs corralled." Tony brightened. "I have shepherding tracks." He thumbed the Bluetooth. The speaker, soaked, emitted a single mournful pop and died. Plan D evaporated. We improvised a barricade with toppled cube shelving, herding dogs into the playroom like fuzzy pinballs. Firefighters rapped out commands, left flank, gate secure, turning the daycare into a tactical course. Somehow, no one bled, but the sofa perished with honors. 20 minutes later, the last dog settled, panting, amid debris. I signed paperwork acknowledging minor property impact. The captain advised a sturdier latch. The city inspector arrived on the tail of the fire truck, clipboard levitating. She clicked her pen with surgical precision, eyes cataloging every dangling wire and mystery stain. Citation: unsecured chemicals, lavender oil, compromised gate, insufficient emergency egress plan. Fine pending. She left. Silence bloomed, punctuated by the occasional squeak of a mourner's toy. Tony bent, picked stuffing from Meatball's wrinkles. "Rock bottom?" he asked. "Feels more like the basement below rock bottom," I said, leaning against the coffin of a couch. My phone vibrated. Video call from Alex. I answered, forgetting the front camera angles directly at chin jowls. The hospital backdrop showed him propped on pillows, ankle cast elevated like a trophy. "Dude," he breathed, eyes widening. "I just saw the news, and my insurance app pinged an incident report from the fire department. What the hell happened to the lobby?" I panned the devastation. his face slid through 5 stages of grief, settled on Marvel. "Dad," he said finally, "maybe shut down for a bit? We can rebuild after surgery, maybe in the spring." I looked at Tony kneeling in stuffing snow, at Banjo asleep in a cardboard crater, at Karen's Yelp missile blinking red on my notifications. Then I remembered the PR aide and the crumpled festival flyer now peeking from the torn couch cushion like one last lottery ticket. "Can't," I told Alex. "We've got 2 weeks till Pause in the Park. We kill it there. We reset the narrative. You focus on getting titanium in that ankle. I'll handle the circus." He stared. "Sure as a subway wedding," I said, because metaphors were broken too. "Gotta go. Lavender rebound headache." I hung up, tugged the flyer free, smoothed the wrinkles. Pause in the Park Festival. Citywide attendance, media booths, influencer sniff and greets, image makeover, or public immolation, 50-50 odds. Tony scraped purple goo into a dustpan. "So," he asked, voice echoing in the ruined lobby, "what's next?" I flipped the flyer toward him like a badge. "We either own that festival or we're toast." The decision clicked in my ribs like a seatbelt. Countdown started the second the flyer left my hand. Tony's grin glowed like a broken neon open sign as he spread the festival flyer between us like a war map. I pinched the bridge of my nose, already tasting the ulcer that was sure to follow. "Catchy, but you skipped phase zero, finding 24 working hours inside the next 12, I said, eyeing the flyer. He winked. "We need trained routines, on-brand merch, and one heroic comeback narrative." "Easy." The morning light streaming through the daycare's window highlighted the determined glint in his eye. Also a repaired lobby, disgruntled clients placated, and a couch that isn't hemorrhaging foam like a clown car autopsy, I countered, gesturing at the remains of our furniture. The smell of fresh vinyl and lingering lavender wafted through the air, a bittersweet reminder of our recent chaos. Tony waved his hand dismissively. "Details. Let's crank a montage." The sound of his voice was a balm to my frazzled nerves, and I found myself smiling despite the impending doom. For the next week, Sunrise looked at us, shrugged, and went back to bed while we hustled through Beacon Hill, hauling agility hurdles made from PVC and municipal regret. The cold morning air stung my face as we worked, the sound of barking dogs and Tony's motivational playlist a constant accompaniment. Banjo learned to weave poles by imagining every pole was a goose. Meatball practiced synchronized lumbering, low center of gravity, high drool velocity. Thor focused on not mugging toddlers, a stretch goal. Princess lounged beside Tony's Bluetooth speaker, sipping bone broth like royalty, while affirmations burbled, "You are enough, and also a very good girl." The sound of her contented sighs was a reward in itself. As we worked, Tony's playlist cycled through motivational tracks, each one more upbeat than the last. I found myself moving in time, despite my better judgment. We were a well-oiled machine, minus the oil, and the machine part. The smell of sweat and dog fur filled the air, a primal scent that was both exhilarating and exhausting. Between drills, we patched the daycare. Tony stapled fresh vinyl over the sofa's ribcage and christened it the Optimism Ottoman. I realigned the gate hinge with a mallet and spite. We rebranded the chewed-through poop bag dispensers by sharpieing inspirational slogans onto them. "Keep calm and pick it up. Fail forward. Scoop backward. Poop happens. So can success." The fluorescent lights overhead cast an unforgiving glare, highlighting the chaos around us. Clients noticed. Accuracy of slogan to reality. Roughly horoscope level, but the novelty distracted from the burnt lavender stench we still couldn't defeat. The sound of barking dogs and the hum of the daycare's equipment created a constant background noise, a reminder that we were always on the verge of chaos. Then the algorithm birthed our final boss, Bex and her perfect pack. I saw the first video during a 5-minute break that ran 48 seconds. Bex stood on the esplanade in spotless athleisure, 9 huskies sitting so symmetrically they looked photoshopped. Her caption, "When professionalism meets passion, #RealDogPros. The clip had likes the way pigeons have diseases, too many, too fast. Tony whistled. Dogs are probably CGI. Look at that auto eye whiten feature. His eyes sparkled with amusement as he handed me the phone. A ping, notification of cancellation, then another. Bex just poached Princess's Thursday slot, Tony said, scrolling through his phone. Hang on, I sputtered. Karen would never. My phone rang. Karen proved that in fact she would. I simply must protect Princess's brand, she announced. Bex offers a Serenity gazebo and climate-controlled cucumber water. Her voice was a cold breeze on a winter morning, leaving me feeling chilled. Cucumbers can't be climate-controlled. They're cucumbers, I pointed out, trying to keep my cool. Small minds, small results, she sniffed. Impress me by Friday or we're done. The line went dead, leaving me staring at the phone in dismay. Tony produced a dog product catalog thick enough to count as structural support. VIP stroller, he said, tapping a page where a poodle reclined like Cleopatra on memory foam velvet. Cup holder for kombucha. Bluetooth. The stroller's sleek design and luxurious features were a siren's call, promising to elevate Princess's status to new heights. How much? I asked, wincing at the prospect. More than cremation, less than therapy, he replied with a grin. The joke fell flat, but I appreciated the effort. As week two limped along, the next crisis surfaced. Permits. Bex's latest post highlighted her custom-wrapped sprinter van and her official festival pass. We had neither. City Hall, I groaned, where paperwork goes to die of exposure. The fluorescent lights in the clerk's office seemed to hum in agreement, casting an unforgiving glare over the proceedings. We packed the application forms, 5 proof of insurance letters, and Meatball for emotional support. Meatball wagged into the marble lobby, fogging up polished floors. A security guard eyed us the way TSA eyes a jar of homemade jam, but Tony flashed his provisional badge and a grin too wide for daylight. Clerk's office, room 40 funeral. Fluorescent lights buzzed like angry insects over bruised blue linoleum. Behind bulletproof glass sat Ms. Dreyfus, a woman whose spirit animal was a traffic ticket. Her expression was a perfect blend of boredom and disdain, a look that said she had seen it all before. Name, she said, monotone. Jack Kowalski, pause and reflect, I replied, trying to sound confident. She squinted. You're the subway guy. The words were a challenge, a gauntlet thrown down. Allegedly, I said, attempting a smile. Festival requires form DP-94C. You brought a DP-94B. Her voice was a metronome, ticking away the seconds. They're identical, I protested. One's salmon. Salmon is outdated. We're mauve now, she said, unyielding. The word mauve was a slap in the face, a reminder of the absurdity of it all. Tony whispered, she's color merchandising us. His voice was a whisper in my ear, a gentle reminder that we were in this together. I inhaled through my molars. Fine, mauve us. The words felt like a surrender, a defeat at the hands of bureaucracy. By 3 p.m., Meatball fell asleep on my foot, drool welding him to my boot. Tony scavenged vending machine tacos for lunch. We signed the last line with orange dust fingerprints. The taste of the takis was a burst of flavor, a brief respite from the monotony. Ms. Dreyfus stamped the packet with the enthusiasm of a DMV sloth. Proceed to finance for fee payment. Cashier closes at 4. The words were a countdown to doom, a reminder that time was running out. It was 3:58. We sprinted so hard Meatball reached a light trot. The cashier shut the window while we were 4 steps away. I threw myself against the glass. Mercy! Puppies! Charity! The words were a desperate plea, a last-ditch effort to salvage the situation. The cashier peeked, clocked the bulldog, and cracked the window exactly 2 inches. Late fee. Her voice was a stone wall, unyielding and unforgiving. How late can I be if you're still open? I asked, exasperated. She shrugged. City math. $50. The words were a punchline, a cruel joke at our expense. I forked over my last non-digital currency. Permit acquired, dignity overdrafted. The sound of the cashier's stamp was a death knell, a reminder that we had finally reached the end of the line. Outside, twilight soaked the skyline. Tony exhaled a foggy sigh. Not bad for bureaucratic berserkers. The words were a consolation prize, a pat on the back for a job well done. Not good enough, I answered, scrolling my feed. Bex now trended for donating freeze-dried salmon bites to a shelter, complete with ring light and mascara. Likes, infinity plus one. The sight was a bitter pill, a reminder that we were playing in the big leagues now. Tony squinted at the phone. Her eyebrows looked micro-bladed by angels. The comment was a joke, a light-hearted jab at Bex's perfectly coiffed appearance. I'm not losing to perfect eyebrows, I vowed. Tomorrow, we film our own hype reel. The words were a declaration of war, a promise to take on the competition and come out on top. We did, sort of. Boston woke cranky and wet, turning our carefully chalked sidewalk obstacle course into a slip and slide of despair. The video captured Banjo unintentionally inventing dog snowboarding, Thor eating the chalk, and Meatball sitting triumphantly on the GoPro. Tony set it to an EDM remix. I posted anyway with the caption, "Authenticity Filter." The sound of the city's reaction was a roar of approval, a validation of our unorthodox methods. 7 likes, 1 from my dentist. The number was a disappointment, a reminder that we still had a long way to go. Thursday night, the doorbell dinged, delivery of the VIP stroller, boxed like a Soviet fridge. Tony assembled it with Allen wrench fervor, attaching a tiny flag that read Princess in Process. The stroller headlights had 3 modes, solid, strobe, apocalypse. We left it on solid. The last thing Princess needed was a rave. The stroller's sleek design and luxurious features were a testament to Tony's ingenuity, a reminder that sometimes the most unlikely solutions can be the most effective. By Friday, Bex had bled us of 5 more clients. The daycare smelled vaguely of defeat and refurbished lavender. The air was thick with tension, a sense of impending doom hanging over us like a cloud. At 6 p.m., Karen swanned in wearing fleece earmuffs shaped like loaves of bread. Princess trotted behind, nails clacking like castanets. Karen surveyed the stroller. "Is the memory foam certified cruelty-free?" Her voice was a challenge, a test of our commitment to Princess's comfort. "Only cruelty here is the price," I muttered, then forced a smile. "Hop in." Princess inspected the chassis, did 3 slow circles, and settled like a cat claiming a pizza box. The sound of her contented sighs was a reward, a reminder that we were on the right track. Karen pursed her lips. She'll also need noise canceling. Parade drummers trigger her inner child. Tony produced dog-sized headphones he'd ordered, just in case. Karen tested them against a white noise app, nodded her approval, and left with a curt, "Don't disappoint us." The words were a warning, a reminder that we were on notice. Dawn of the festival, Saturday, 4 a.m., the world silent except for my coffee machine begging for retirement benefits. We loaded the rented cargo van, agility props, first aid kit, 30 spare poop bags, each stamped "Believe in your dump," and a cooler of kibble. Tony labeled everything with masking tape, harnesses, grit, treat pouch, glory, me equals. Dogs boarded in assigned crates, Banjo with a tennis ball, Meatball with a cooling mat, Thor with existential rage, Princess in her stroller seat-belted like tiny royalty. The sound of their excited barking was a cacophony, a symphony of chaos. At 5, we swung by the daycare for last-minute supplies and found Bex leaning against her branded van across the street, phone angled for sunrise dog fluencer content. Her hair glimmered like it had been airbrushed in real life. The sight was a slap in the face, a reminder that we were in for a fight. She waved, "Morning, Metro Mutts." The greeting was a jab, a subtle dig at our expense. "It's pause and reflect," I corrected, trying to keep my cool. "Right, right." She pocketed the phone. Just wanted to wish you luck. Love an underdog story when the underdog stays under. The words were a threat, a promise of things to come. Tony whispered, she's like if Home Depot sold Smug. The comment was a joke, a lighthearted jab at Bex's perfectly coiffed appearance. We secured the van, double-checked crates, and hit the highway. Halfway to the common, Meatball burped with nuclear bass. A chorus of digestive gurgles followed, each crate its own timpani. The sound was a warning, a sign that things were about to get interesting. I sniffed. Did we feed them chili? The question was a joke, a desperate attempt to deflect the impending doom. Same kibble as always, Tony said, checking the cooler. His brow furrowed. Why is the bag resealed with glitter tape? The words were a red flag, a warning that something was amiss. I pictured Bex's sparkly phone case. She didn't, I said, the words a growl. He poured a handful, pellets studded with flax and something fibrous enough to knit sweaters. The label, Colon Clean Crunch, high fiber for fast results. The words were a death sentence, a guarantee of chaos. A rumble rolled through the van like distant artillery. Tony's eyes widened. We're riding a poop bomb. The comment was an understatement, a gross understatement. Windows down. Pray. The words were a desperate plea, a last-ditch effort to mitigate the damage. Boston Common parking area resembled a Comic-Con for canines. Tents, banners, vendors hawking artisanal yak chews. We parked behind the main stage. Tony sprinted to registration while I cracked crate doors for ventilation. Hot fiber-laced breath steamed my glasses. The air was thick with the smell of dog fur and excitement. A PA system crackled. Pause in the paw, pause in the park, opens in 10 minutes. The announcement was a starting gun, a signal to launch into chaos. Tony hustled back, pass lanyards flapping. We're slotted first for the agility demo. Like, immediately. The words were a challenge, a gauntlet thrown down. Naturally, I said, my voice a resigned sigh. I unlocked the crates in order of least to most combustible. Banjo shot out, skated circles on the grass. Thor leapt, barking at unseen subway demons. Meatball waddled, stomach drums audible. Princess rolled in her stroller, eyes half-lidded behind pink aviators. The sound of their excited barking was a cacophony, a symphony of chaos. I clipped all leashes to my belt, a decision history would soon laugh at, grabbed the treat pouch, and nodded to Tony. Ready? He opened the van door wider. The festival gates parted in the distance. Crowds cheered. An announcer misread our name over the loudspeaker. Up next, give it up for, pause and regret? The mistake was a harbinger, a sign that things were about to go off the rails. I bark laughed. Foreshadowing. Then the starter cannon for the 5K dog dash fired. Every dog in New England lunged. Our pack erupted, leashes yanking me forward so hard my feet left earth. Tony shouted, engage core! The stroller's tiny flag whipped flat as we careened toward the stage. Behind us, the van door slammed, scattering snacks. Ahead, a sea of spectators gasped, phones raised for the next viral catastrophe. The sound of their cheering was a roar, a deafening roar that threatened to consume us whole. I flew horizontal, belt cinched by 6 howling rockets, Princess cruising up front like a tiny parade queen on a chrome float. The announcer screamed, here comes pause and regret, and the crowd roared, half horror, half joy. My boots barely skimmed the grass when the first agility hurdle loomed. And that's where gravity and destiny high-fived, right before everything went end over fur. Cut to me attempting grace and achieving slapstick. The laws of physics voted unanimously against me. I didn't so much clear the first hurdle as smear across it. The PVC bar cracked, my shin screamed, and I rode the wreckage straight into a vendor booth stacked with organic beet-infused bully sticks. Bags burst like party poppers. Banjo interpreted the crimson dust as goose blood, howled a war cry, and yanked left. Thor yanked right. My pelvis decided to split the difference. Somewhere in the chaos, my brain replayed the red line conductor's "Who's got the zoo?" like a taunt, and the answer was me, apparently, and the zoo is armed with fiber. The smell of beet dust and wet dog fur filled the air as I stumbled, my boots scuffling against the grass. As I careened through the crowd, a bystander's coffee splattered across my jacket, and I felt the warmth seep into my skin, a fleeting comfort. The sound of barking dogs and the hum of the festival created a cacophony that was both overwhelming and exhilarating. I wore the leashes like a ceremonial macrame sash titled Poor Life Choices, Limited Edition. The mime's silent scream was a highlight, and I couldn't help but chuckle. High-fiber kibble finally detonated. Meatball squatted center stage like a Shakespearean cannon, firing steaming brown soliloquies that sent spectators sprinting for deodorized cover. Spritzers of farm-to-tail air freshener tried to keep up, but the math wasn't in their favor. Clouds of lavender poop fog drifted across the grass, giving the whole affair a Renaissance fair plague vibe. The bouquet hit like a flashback to our late whale-shaped diffuser. May it rest? Screaming in Valhalla. Somewhere a kettlecorn drum hissed, sugar butter haze colliding tragically with reality. I gagged, tasting adolescence. Somewhere behind me, the festival announcer surrendered. Well, folks, that's happening. Moving on. His microphone squealed with that hot metal MBTA-adjacent whine, then cut out entirely. I winced, rubbing my ears. I regained verticality beside the main platform just in time to see Bex glide up the ramp with her 9 huskies aligned like a monochrome xylophone. Matching bandanas, matching smirks, not a single hair out of place, on dogs or handler. Her teeth flashed, blue-white, probably solar-powered. I felt a pang of intimidation, but Tony's encouraging nod helped me shake it off. "Oh, Jack," she cooed, voice softer than reclaimed barnwood yoga blocks. "You brought the ambiance." Her eyes sparkled with amusement, and I couldn't help but laugh. "Happy to fertilize," I croaked, brushing beet dust and mystery from my jacket. Tony's earlier take echoed in my head. If Home Depot sold Smug, they'd name it Bex. I shot him a look, and he grinned, his eyes crinkling at the corners. Her brow arched. "Tell you what, one-on-one. My best dog versus your," she eyed my disaster flock. "Team." The challenge hung in the air, a gauntlet thrown down. "Define versus," I said, stalling for time. I glanced at Tony, who gave me a reassuring thumbs up. She snapped her fingers. A husky named Yukon dismounted the line, tail perfectly plumed. Obstacle course dash. Fastest time wins prime demo slot, and rumor says, a city sponsorship contract. The stakes were higher than I'd anticipated, but I was determined to give it a shot. Behind me, Tony materialized, holding his phone landscape style. "I'm already live." 23,000 viewers. Comments 98% pro train wreck. He squinted at the chat. "Shout out to Park Street Skater, says World Star would like a word, lean in." I felt a surge of adrenaline as I realized our audience was growing by the second. Karen chose that exact moment to roll up, princess enthroned in the VIP stroller, headphone ears matted to perfect curls. Karen's nostrils flared at the poop fog, but she slapped on a pageant smile and fished out a laminated feelings wheel. "Remember, Jack, positive vibrations only." Princess journaled about noise boundaries last night. She angled her own phone for dual stream. Stakes officially skyscraper high. I took a deep breath, mentally preparing for the challenge ahead. I blew a beet flake from my lip. "Bex, you're on." The words felt like a promise, a vow to give it my all. The judges, a trio of local radio hosts in matching polos, one sporting a very mauve clipboard like City Hall cosplay, clapped like animatronic seals. Yukon took his mark. Banjo did too, although sideways. Princess would ride shotgun in the stroller, no sense ruining her blowout. I tied Thor's leash to the stroller handle for additional horsepower, clipped Banjo and Meatball to my belt again, and prayed to St. Francis of, "Please don't let anyone sue." The dogs yapped in excitement, their tails wagging furiously as we prepared to launch. Airhorn. Yukon launched, an arrow of husky efficiency. Over hurdle, through tunnel, across teeterboard, flawless, like he'd been trained by a Roomba with feelings. I watched, impressed despite myself. We launched a different direction, downward. Meatball's second cannon blast exploded mid-stride, propelling the stroller like a bottle rocket. Thor barked at the acceleration, dug in, and the stroller fishtailed toward the weave poles. Tony yelled, "Bark it till you park it," like that was useful. I hopped over a fresh poop crater, dragged by Banjo, and used the momentum to slingshot the whole convoy through the first two poles, knocking them flat. Technical foul? Maybe. Spectators roared approval anyway. I grinned, feeling a rush of exhilaration. Yukon hit the pause table, waiting out his mandatory 5 seconds like a monk in a snow globe. We barreled past, skipping the table entirely because nobody with sense asked Princess to downstay. The stroller's tiny flag, Princess in process, decapitated 2 flower pots before catching a gust and snapping free, spearing a sponsor banner that collapsed on Bex's Instagram crew. Tony's camera caught every frame, hearts and laughing cry emojis geysering on screen. I felt a surge of pride, knowing we were giving it our all. Bex's veneer cracked, literal hairline fracture dead center of her smile. She hissed something that rhymed with witch, forgetting her mic was still live. The crowd oohed like school kids at recess. Judging faces puckered. I winced, feeling a pang of sympathy for Bex. Final obstacle, a low A-frame slick with last night's dew. Yukon hit it first, bounding up the incline, but a stray bully stick bag from my earlier crash had wedged under the descent ramp. As Yukon crested the peak, the bag burst, scattering beet powder down the plank. Husky paws hydroplaned. Yukon skied off the side, landed unhurt but humbled in a kiddie pool meant for cooling paws. Our turn. No chance the stroller was clearing that summit, so I improvised. Ramp's under maintenance, I yelled, veering toward the side lane, a utility path technically outside course boundaries but still inside the corral. Banjo vaulted a hay bale. I lifted the stroller's front wheels like a dock worker, and Thor provided turbo. We popped out beyond the finish light beam 16 seconds after Yukon's slip. Stopwatch beeped. A radio host judge spat iced coffee. Unofficial record? He squeaked. Crowd went feral. Someone hoisted a half-eaten funnel cake like a torch. Princess stood in her stroller, front paws raised, soaking in adulation behind rose-tinted lenses. I beamed with pride, feeling a sense of accomplishment wash over me. Bex stormed over, mascara running like sparklers. He skipped half the obstacles. Judge 3, short, plump, voice for late-night jazz, shrugged. Course map doesn't forbid alternate lane. Creative routing counts. He pointed at a clause no one had noticed. Path must begin at start and trip the finish laser, period. He tapped his mauve clipboard with bureaucratic gravitas, and somewhere Ms. Dreyfuss's ears burned in approval. I felt a surge of relief, knowing we'd managed to stay within the rules. Bex's live feed still rolled, her cheeks blazed. "This festival is a joke," she screamed, then booted a toppled weave pole. It ricocheted, splashed into Yukon's kiddie pool, soaking her Lululemon whole set. Microphone still hot. The internet captured every sloppy decibel. I winced, feeling a pang of embarrassment for Bex. Tony panned to me. I offered a double thumbs up and because impulse control is overrated, dabbed. Comments detonated. Grandpa slays. Dab is back. Somebody sponsor this madman. I chuckled, feeling a sense of joy wash over me. Festival staff escorted Bex off stage. She slipped on beet dust, landed in Meatball's final deposit, and the universe signed the punchline with a plop. In the crowd, the mayoral aide from the Goose fiasco gave me a discreet thumbs up like she'd bet the over on chaos. I grinned, feeling a sense of validation. Karen stepped into frame, hair immaculate despite airborne fiber. "Princess wishes to issue a gratitude statement," she said, producing the poodle's tiny anxiety journal. She scribbled a smiley face, held it to the camera, and whispered, "Five stars reinstated, for now. Her feelings wheel currently reads, serenish." I exhaled for the first time all morning, feeling a sense of relief wash over me. A bell rang near the craft booth row. Cutest canine contest results. Princess motored her stroller that direction, Thor trotting proudly beside, while the rest of us followed like shell-shocked groupies. Judges pinned a pink satin ribbon to the stroller canopy. Cutest canine. Grand champion. Confetti cannons. Who funded that? Blasted biodegradable sparkles. Tony caught a handful, popped them into his pocket. For the daycare mantle, he said. Right above the optimism ottoman. I smiled, feeling a sense of pride and accomplishment. A hush rippled through the crowd. I turned to find Alex hobbling on crutches, hospital wristband still flapping. His eyes were wet, possibly emotion, possibly wind shear. Dad, he breathed, they've been looping you on Channel 9 all morning. The dab, man. I chuckled, feeling a sense of joy and relief wash over me. Doctors cleared you to escape? I asked, trying to keep my tone light. Technically, no, he grinned. Saw the feed, had to witness the chaos live. I smiled, feeling a sense of gratitude toward Alex. We side-hugged, careful of shattered ankle, and immediately got tangled in Banjo's leash. Classic us. Banjo wagged so hard he nearly rebooted. I laughed, feeling a sense of joy and connection with my son. So, Alex said, once we'd unwound, business partner, 50-50, you handle outdoor theatrics, I handle spreadsheets that keep us insured? The offer hung in the air, a challenge and an opportunity. 60-40, I countered. I get hazard pay and coffee. Alex chuckled, and we shook hands, sealing the deal. He pointed at my hand. For the first time since January, I was still holding a full cup, lid unscratched, steam curling like victory incense. I hadn't even noticed. Somewhere, the tea conductors never come back turned into the MBTA's facepalm tweet, and I felt almost invited to public spaces again. Tony wheeled up the stroller, Princess and Ribbon both intact. Livestream peaked at 97,000. He showed the screen, Purina, a local brewery, even the MBTA tweet, any chance you keep dogs on grass next time, with a train emoji facepalming. I laughed, feeling a sense of wonder and excitement. Karen cleared her throat. Given recent successes, I withdrew my Yelp draft. She produced a laminated one-star draft, snapped it in half like a breadstick, and swept off, mission complete. Behind her, Princess delicately pawed her journal, and I swear, dotted an I with a heart. I smiled, feeling a sense of gratitude toward Karen. I sipped coffee, actual nectar, while dogs collapsed in a communal snore pile at my feet. Sun inched past the State House dome, finally warm. A V of geese cut across the blue. The lead goose glanced down, thought better of it, kept flying. For the first time in weeks, nobody was screaming. The silence was a balm to my frazzled nerves. My phone buzzed, unknown number again. I almost ignored it, then remembered last time that happened, I inherited an army. Jack Kowalski? A chipper voice asked. I'm with Boston's St. Paddy's Day Parade Committee. Heard you're the Chaos Whisperer? Think your dogs could lead next month's procession? The question hung in the air, a challenge and an opportunity. I looked at the nap heap, Banjo twitching in goose-chasing dreams, Meatball farting softly, Princess spooning her ribbon like a teddy bear. I looked at Alex smiling under purple eye bags. I looked at my coffee, still blessedly upright. Sure, I said, but we're bringing our own public works cleanup crew this time. The words felt like a promise, a vow to take on the next challenge. The caller laughed, unfazed. We'll budget extra confetti. I hung up, tucked the phone away, and finally let myself sag into the grass. Tony sat beside me, flicking beet flakes off his sneakers. Alex propped his crutch like a campsite flag. Spectators drifted, booths packed, sun blazed. In my head, I could already see Monday, the ribbon taped a little crooked over the front desk, confetti stuck in the vent so the daycare sneezed sparkle for a week, the optimism ottoman hosting victory naps it hadn't earned. Tony would sharpie a new slogan on the treat jar, fail forward, fetch faster, and laminate an actual egress plan in font size mauve. Karen's revised Yelp would read vibrationally aligned, which means nothing and everything, and the phones would ring with clients who preferred authentic chaos to climate-controlled cucumbers. By Thursday, Alex would click through spreadsheets while I wrangled leashes that somehow still tied themselves into interpretive knots. The lavender ghost would finally lose to kettle corn air and wet dog honesty. City Hall would learn my name said with only mild dread. And if Bex's meltdown gif lived forever, so would the clip of Princess, victorious in a stroller with noise-canceling headphones, surfing a wave of Boston applause. Honestly? Fair trade. Guest responsibility isn't half bad once you learn to juggle it, preferably while wearing a poncho. I raised my coffee in salute to whoever was still listening inside my skull. To future catastrophes, I whispered, may they all come with ribbons and refillable mugs. Thank you for choosing Astori Publishing.